Many of you are familiar with the vegetable crop known as the table beet, and you may be used to eating it, consuming it in this form, a rather unimaginatively canned vegetable, which I happen to love. Not everybody does. Beets may be one of the few vegetables that has a game that is produced for people's dislike of beets. It's a game called Bad Beets. Where you give away your beets. And it's a crop that people love and hate. And I think part of the hate has to do with the fact that many people find the beet to be very earthy. It tastes like dirt, tastes like soil. And it's this feature that really repels some customers, while other people are attracted to the earthiness of beet. I happen to love them for that particular reason. So, as a breeder, we recognize this dichotomy of human interest, and this is the motivation for the project that I'm going to talk about, which is we feel like we've got earthy enough beets out there, but can we breed a beet that's lower in earthiness that would attract consumers who might be interested in a sweet, maybe even crunchy root vegetable that wouldn't have that soil-like taste? So I'm going to talk about our geosmin work, and I'll start by saying that if you've eaten spinach or obviously table beet, Swiss chard, or maybe even the fruit from the cactus pear, you know that earthiness, that earthy soil-like quality, which is produced by soil microbes, also some fungi and some algae, and it's due to a volatile organic compound called geosmin. And geosmin is something that is ubiquitous in all environments, and humans are exquisitely sensitive to the scent of this molecule. Now, the bacterial geneticists, particularly the ones that work on Streptomyces, have figured out the biochemical pathway and transformation to produce geosmin. They know how farnesyl diphosphate is converted into two compounds, germicrine D and germicodionol, and these condense into geosmin. The enzymes, the substrates, these are all really well worked out in bacteria, but they've yet to be explored in plants, partly because we're not sure, or we haven't really been sure up until the work here by Lynn Mayer that I'm going to talk about this morning, why beets have this earthy quality. Is it because they are associated in their growth with a microbe like Streptomyces, and so that Streptomyces is producing geosmin that the beets take up? Is it because there are endogenous endophytic microorganisms in the beet that cause the production of geosmin, or is it possible that the beet is producing this compound itself? And so the work that I'm going to talk about were two projects designed to get at some of these questions. Fortunately, the technology of gas chromatography and mass spectrometry exists. Without this technology, we wouldn't be able to do this work. And this is a very important piece of equipment that allows us to explore and measure volatiles like geosmin. But it's not just the GCMS, it's also coupled with headspace solid phase microextraction technology. And this SPIMI technique, as it's known, allows us to trap those volatiles and quantify them in a very efficient way. And so this technology, the GCMS and the SPIMI, were optimized for plants like beet by a group at Washington State University. And so we're very indebted for that work. The first project in our lab to explore this was that of Amy Freidig, who looked at different beet cultivars that were grown in the field and in the greenhouse with both autoclaved and non-autoclaved soil. Without going into all the details of Amy's work, I'll say that cultivars of beet and also of Swiss chard, sugar beet, and mangel, which are close relatives of the table beet, have characteristic geosmin signatures. That is, doesn't matter if you grow them in a field or if you grow them in a greenhouse, if you autoclave the soil, there is consistency to the geosmin values of these cultivars. You can identify cultivars such as Kyosia and Solyndra. Those are the second and third cultivars from the left, and cultivars like Blancoma and Touchstone Gold that are high and low in geosmin, respectively. And these are repeatable. So it started to suggest to us that beet cultivars may be producing their own geosmin. And I'm going to talk now about the PhD work of Lynn Mayer, who finished her work in December of 2017 and is now a carrot breeder with Bejo Seeds in Idaho. Lynn did half-sib family recurrent selection for geosmin in two table beet populations that I'll talk about, and she also grew beets in sterile tissue culture environments to see if we could determine whether the beets were producing the geosmin themselves. This is a picture of some of Lynn's selected roots from last August at our Arlington Research Farm, and her work was recently published in Crop Science. We began this project before Lynn arrived by choosing low geosmin cultivars, that is Touchstone Gold and Blancoma, which are pictured on the top, and high geosmin cultivars, Bull's Blood and Kyoja, which are pictured below those as the starting low and high populations respectively. I intermated those for a couple of cycles, and we began selection when Lynn arrived. Cycles 1 through 4 were completed by her, and in each generation, which takes one full year, she analyzed the half-sib families in a randomized complete block design with 2 reps out in the field. She selected based on the geosmin values of individual roots within and among these half-sib families with about 80 to 100 roots per population. The way it would look would be you'd grow a beet from, say, June until August. Those beets would then go into vernalization, and they would be planted in the greenhouse in December. And you can see them growing in pots here. They would begin growing by January and February. We could then intermate the selected roots. That intermating would take place during our winter, and then it would produce seed by May, which could go back in the field. Half-sib family recurrent selection is a very efficient form of recurrent selection for the table beet because we can harvest seed off of individual female plants that seed becomes the half-sib family. The pollen from the population at large pollinates all of those plants. The GCMS and SPIMI techniques were done with beet cores with a metal probe that was pushed into the beet root and pulled out, and that core was ground with water and measured in the GC. This process, although it is incredible, the kind of data we can get from this is still incredibly laborious. And the measuring of the geosmin values in the recurrent selection program takes months. Lynn called it a campaign. She would begin her work in October and often not finish until January. This is a picture of the half-sib families growing out in the field on the left. And this is a picture of Lynn herself cutting open some of the beets that she was selecting. This picture shows Lynn behind some of the selected families from one of the years. And this is the high population. I can tell that because the high population was characterized by very darkly pigmented roots. The low population was characterized by very light pigmented roots. This figure shows the results from the selection itself. There was very little change in the population between cycle 1 and cycle 2 on the high side, but if you'll notice by cycle 3, those dark circles, the high geosmin population responded very dramatically. And there was a rather rapid decrease in geosmin in the low geosmin population from cycle 1 to cycle 2 and then to cycle 3. Looking here at cycle 4, and I'm showing only the selected families in cycle 4, you can see that there was a steady increase and a steady decrease, respectively, in the high and low geosmin populations. In the middle of cycle 4, I'm showing the Czech cultivars, Bull's Blood, which is the triangle, and I think Touchstone Gold, which is the diamond. And so you can see where the Czech varieties are, both high and low, and where our selected materials are. They're quite outside the Czechs. The overall gain from selection in the first 3 cycles was 52% gain in geosmin. The overall decrease in geosmin in the low population was over 75% in the first 3 cycles. And then that increased to over 90% and over 85% by cycle 4. So Lynn's data show really clearly that she was able to make gains and losses in the populations as she wished with half-sib family recurrent selection for geosmin, suggesting that this trait is responsive to selection, that the beet itself, whether we're selecting for microbes that are associated with the beet, or whether we're selecting for geosmin production in the beet, that it responds to selection. These populations, by the way, are being carried on in a new research project by Solveig Hansen, who's pictured on the right in this slide. She's developed four populations out of these materials, both high and low, that she has selected with Wisconsin farmers and chefs. And those populations are being continued in a participatory breeding way. We hope to be able to eventually release very, very low geosmin material and very high geosmin material that can be used in different ways by consumers and processors. Second part of the work is the growing of these beet plants in tissue culture. And as I mentioned, geosmin is produced by a number of microbial species. The goal of this particular part of the study was to grow the beets in tissue culture and to see if we could validate the sterility of the tissue cultures and say that the beets were growing in a sterile environment, whether they produced geosmin or not. There was an experiment at Washington State University that was done about 10 years ago, or a little more than 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, on this particular question, but it only did a visual inspection. It didn't assess whether the cultures had microbial growth in them. To do this, we use 16S ribosomal RNA sequencing, which is a great way to identify bacterial communities. And Lynn used four different genotypes in her study. She used a CHIME analysis for the pipeline in order to try to understand the whether there were bacteria present. And then she did GCMS on the leaf tissue to see if there was geosmin. 15 of the 16 samples produced geosmin, so we are clearly getting geosmin in tissue culture. And almost all of the amplified ribosomal RNA, almost all of that sequence is actually chloroplast and mitochondria from the beet tissue. And that's what this slide shows without going, I don't have time to go into the details of it, but I can tell you that when you look very carefully at what the sequence data is telling you, what we're amplifying here are chloroplasts and mitochondria from beet, not bacteria. So we can very carefully say now with these data that the tissue cultures are sterile, they contain only beets, and they produce a lot of geosmin. So if you compare the amount of geosmin produced in a tissue cultured beet, it's actually way higher than what's produced in a greenhouse grown beet. So clearly, these plants do appear to be producing geosmin themselves without any microbes, suggesting that the machinery, the genetic machinery for their production, for geosmin production, is present. So to conclude, we've been able to verify that the tissue cultures are sterile and that it does appear that there is a serious claim for endogenous geosmin production in the table beet. Lynn was also able to show that selection was effective to modify geosmin concentration, and we've now made this trait a target in our breeding program. Yeah. Great question. So the question is about whether the dark color is associated with the geosmin. And we've observed that in all of our work. We don't know the answer to that. People clearly eat with their eyes. And so we wondered, you know, that observation has been made by people. The yellow beets seem to be more mild. The red beets seem to be stronger. But we've not been able to determine the biology of that yet. Great question. Thank you.